a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Priced out. Gas prices. A special hour with David Dujanovic.
Two questions we're going to dive into right now as we await the president's delayed news conference about Russian sanctions on the oil imports. Will Russia even care? Will Russia even feel the impact? And then secondly, I want to know, what do we do now? What do we do to make up for the Russian imports we'll be banning?
That's a great question. Will they care? Because it seems to be just about the only thing that Russia is good at is producing energy, oil, natural gas. So logically, I think it's got to, right? This is their one thing.
As I said yesterday repeatedly, and I think a lot of people felt the same way I did. I felt like a lot of us were on the same page with this. I know it's going to cost us here on the home front. I know I'm going to pay more at the gas pump, and it's going to set me back $50, $60, maybe even $100 a month as I also try to support my daughter going to college and fill up her gas tank. But nothing compared to what the people in Ukraine are going through. And in fact, KSL 5 Television's Matt Ruskin traveled around the valley yesterday. I saw his report on KSL 5 TV. And he asked drivers, yeah, they're feeling the pinch too. And then this driver who was filling up, his name's Carl, he has some ideas about it.
Yeah, we are. I'd say that if we continued producing our own energy here in the States, that we wouldn't have these rises that we see right now.
But that is not an easy solution.
Yeah.
It's just not a light switch where you can just flip on and the oil starts flowing. You know, you got to go drill it out, right? So now we're trying to look for alternatives, and those alternatives aren't very exciting.
Amos Giora, University of Utah Law Professor, we are so grateful that you're willing to join us when we have these types of discussions. I know you spent 20 years with the Israeli Defense Forces. It seems to me that you got your finger on the pulse of what is going on around the globe. So what's your take? Will President Putin care about this latest sanction?
Good morning. I think, yes, I think for three different reasons. One, because there'll be economic impact, I mean, whether immediate or trickle down, but there will be economic impact. Two, it would signal somewhat of a tightening of the West's, or at least America's, reaction to Putin. And a regime like his, well, it's his regime, is sensitive to the notion of, it's not quite delegitimization, of not full legitimization. These are very, very sensitive, thin-skinned regimes. And the fact that the United States is going to block Russian oil to America sends a clear signal, even to Putin, or particularly perhaps to Putin, that there are limits. And I think there's one other issue that's important to address, and I don't know because I'm in Israel, and I don't know what play this is getting in the American press. There's clearly demonstrations in Russia against the war. I believe yesterday or on Monday, somewhere between 3,500 to 5,000 people were arrested demonstrating. The regime there is not used to this. And I think the combination of demonstrations against the war, plus if this begins to hit people in, you know, in the pocket, if the ruble continues to be impacted, I don't know, it's not my quote, it's not my line, it came from somewhere that I saw today, that while Putin is, you know, his face is forward to the Ukraine, perhaps he should also be thinking about his back. And I thought that was a very interesting way of phrasing it.
That's an interesting thought. I always just assumed that he didn't care, that he had his thumb pressing down on his people to a degree that any kind of rebellion or rising up, he would just be able to swat aside. Do you think there's enough energy and momentum behind this from the Russian people that he could be influenced?
There was an interview here in Israel last night between a Russian social media person, a woman, and an Israeli. And the Russian was willing to have her face shown on the screen.
Professor.
Priced out. Gas prices. A special hour with David Dujanovic.
President Biden, moments ago, talking about the issuing of sanctions against Russian oil. He said he knows right now we're hurting at the pump, but this is no time for the major manufacturers of oil, suppliers of oil, to, you know, artificially jack up the prices.
To the oil and gas companies and to the finance firms that back them, we understand Putin's war against the people of Ukraine is causing prices to rise. We get that. That's self-evident. But, it's no excuse to exercise excessive price increases or padding profits or any kind of effort to exploit this situation.
University of Utah Professor Amos Giora joins us right now. Sorry, the president interrupted our interview, so we appreciate you rejoining us. I don't know if you had much of a chance to hear what President Biden had to say, but I wonder how much should we be prepared for? The president talked a lot about, hey, these gas prices, this is the price of defending freedom. Is that true? Is there that direct correlation, gas prices and the defending freedom?
I think it's a little bit, of an exaggeration to say it's the price of defending freedom. But I do think if the United States is going to engage Putin without actual physical engagement, then this seems to be the logical next step. But I think there are three, if not four, different audiences in the president's speech. One is Putin. Two, I think it's also a boost, I would think, to the Ukrainian people. Three, it's a message to Europe to amp up their actions against Russia. And I think it's also an attempt to convince the American people that while there will be financial hardships, there are those moments in history where, albeit the economic difficulty, but there are those moments in history where important and difficult steps are necessary. I don't know if it's about freedom. I don't exactly know what those phrases mean. Well thought. It's reassuring to hear rational arguments being made from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And I think that in the context of this very complicated chess game that Biden and Putin are playing, I think this is absolutely the right decision, with the understanding that absolutely there will be hardships imposed on the American people.
I want to get into something that you said earlier, Professor Amos Giora, joining us live right now, talking about the new sanctions that the president has just announced on Russian oil. And you said earlier before the president took the microphone, something about Putin and thin skin. And I wondered if it bothers President Putin at all that President Biden has pretty regularly referred to this as Putin's war.
I think that's I think that's smart. And I think it's smart because it's pointing the clear accusatory finger at the one person who the accusatory finger should be pointed at. And it's also very clearly distinguishing between Putin and the Russian people. Because what Biden is saying is we, the United States of America, have no beef whatsoever with the Russian people, who, by the way, are suffering. And I'll tell you a quick story in a second. We have nothing against the Russian people. We absolutely are accusing you, Vladimir Putin, for what you are doing not only to the Ukrainians, but as a trickle-down, what you're also doing to the Russians. So there was a story that I was told this morning here in Israel that somebody who lives in Russia was able to use their rubles the other day, for instance, to buy, you know, chicken or make meat, you know, dinner for their family. That same amount of rubles today buys you literally nothing. So if you go to the ATM machine in Moscow and you get the same amount of rubles, but you can't really do anything with it, I said earlier before the president spoke that there are now demonstrations against the war in Russia, in Moscow, in St. Petersburg. That clearly has taken the regime by surprise. But if people don't have rubles that can buy them food, that too is going to take them out to the street. And there's an interesting quote by one of the demonstrators who said, this is going to cause us pain, like physical pain. I mean, if you watch the arrest, you see how they arrest. This will cause us physical pain, but there will also be pain later. So we might as well pay the price now, take to the street, have the pain, knowing that we're also doing something long-term. I find that to be incredibly courageous.
Professor Amos Giora, I think as we hear the president talk about this and how it's going to be difficult at the gas pump, we start looking mm-hmm. for alternatives. So I've heard a couple countries thrown out there, and I want to get your response as we start talking about negotiating with Venezuela, negotiating with Iran to get gas and to help fill the world supply. What are your reactions to the idea of working with Venezuela and Iran for gas purposes?
So we're going to put aside the question is, why doesn't America create its own energy sources? We'll save that for another day, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's a fair question to dive into.
That's a deep dive.
Let's skip over that.
Let's start with Venezuela.
So, in these moments, in the world of complex geopolitics where there is no such thing as friendships, right, you sometimes make a pact with the devil. And if the way to minimize the reliance on Russian oil is to deal with the Venezuelans, then you deal with the Venezuelans. But the really interesting question is one you just asked now about Iran, because it's clear that there's movement with respect to the nuclear deal with Iran. It's interesting to think the Iranians now could say to themselves, wait a minute, the U.S. perhaps, maybe, needs us at the moment. And is that a way for the Iranians to, quote unquote, sweeten the nuclear deal with the Americans? Full stop. I remind all of us that in years past or in decades past, the United States was able to tap into oil from the Gulf, particularly from Saudi Arabia. And I don't know if that's on the table. And if that's the way to be able to not get Russian oil, but to have ensure that we don't have skyrocketing gas prices is by dealing with the Iranians and the Venezuelans, then in this chess game, you say Russia's really bad, Iran is bad, and bad is better than bad. I mean, these are the kinds of equations that are necessary.
Yeah. I mean, it just sounds like a whole stack of horrible choices, and then you pick the one that is the least horrible or least bad?
The least bad.
I there's your headline, friends. The least bad.
And yeah.
That's what Machiavellian geopolitics is. There are no friends in this business. You try to maintain some kind of a moral grasp. You do. I think what the president is articulating is we, the United States of America, have to protect the Ukrainian people. And I'll tell you a really quick story because I'm sure you have a list of other people. We here in Israel have made an unspoken decision, which is extraordinary, which we talk about at length some other time, to say about the Ukrainians that we are going to let bygones be bygones. We don't forget that in the Holocaust, the Ukrainians were maybe the worst. But we're saying for now that's not important, because what's important are Ukrainian refugees. We have now Ukrainians, non-Jewish Ukrainians, coming to Israel. There's a government decision on this. And it is as if we have said collectively, without saying it, that what happened 80 years ago takes a backseat to the plight of a Gentile Ukrainian family. That's, I think, a story well worth pursuing in the context of what you do when faced with those horrible pictures of refugees.
Of children.
Yes.
Yeah, of children. And I'm looking at a picture right now, and so far, Professor Giora, a picture is worth 1,000 words, but we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people who have fled Ukraine.
There are 2 million Ukrainian refugees. There's a large Jewish community in the Ukraine, but the government of Israel decided in the last 24 or 48 hours that, because don't forget that in Israel we have something called the law of return, where only is complicated, who's a Jew and who can come to Israel. Put that aside. And the government said, we're in essence putting that aside. And what's important is to open our doors to Jew and non-Jew alike, in the same way that Israel opened its doors to Vietnamese refugees. Well, two of you are way too young for this, but in the aftermath of the Vietnam War, we opened our doors to Vietnamese here who clearly weren't Jewish. It's in these moments, if you ask me, that a country's morals are truly tested. That's where morality comes in.
Truly. And what a fantastic story, Professor. Thank you so much for joining us. Incredibly magnanimous of Israel to welcome Ukrainians and to really set aside the dark and evil history of World War II and the Holocaust, to be able to say, we forgive you for right now. We don't forget, but we need to welcome you into our borders right now.
We'll continue this conversation in the 10 o'clock hour, beginning with the governor's letter to the White House to free up oil and gas leases. What the president had to say about that.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.